open your Bibles to Genesis chapter 32. As you're turning there, let me remind you, just 20 days from now, the Summer Olympics will kick off in Paris. Anybody excited about the Olympics? It feels like people don't get as excited about the Olympics as they used to. I remember when I was a kid, it was like, oh my goodness, this is so cool. You know, I just remember loving the Olympics. I wanted to be in the Olympics. That did not work out. There was one time that I arranged a neighborhood Olympics, and I called all the other kids in the neighborhood together, and I made medals, you know, like wrapped them in aluminum foil and like gold, you know, stuff and this kind of thing. But the thing that I did, this is sort of a vulnerable story that it's true though. The thing that I did was I only invited the kids I knew I could beat. This like classic performer achiever, which is like, you know, who I am inside. It was so funny. So my dad found out about this and he made me invite the athletes of the neighborhood, and I didn't win any gold medals, my own Olympics. But anyway, that has nothing to do with the text. What I did want to mention to you, though, is the Olympics are going to start. Anyone know there's a brand new sport that's going to be in the Olympics this time for the very first time? Anybody know what it is? Breakdancing. Yes, breakdancing is going to be an Olympic sport. It's called breaking. Anyone know what the oldest sport is that the athletes will be competing in? The most ancient sport. Anybody know what it is? I heard running. How could I argue with running? I don't know. But my research tells me it's wrestling. It's wrestling. So wrestling as a sport, okay, as a competitive sport, goes back at least 5,000 years. They've found images of wrestlers in ancient caves and Egyptian tombs and Greek pottery. For almost as long as human beings have been around, people have been wrestling together competitively, not just, you know, in war, but as a friendly competition. Now, one thing that I was thinking about with wrestling is not known for the modesty of the uniforms, okay? I have literally in my pocket an entire wrestling outfit in my pocket. And I want to show you what these athletes are going to be competing in. Anyone know what this is called?
Singlet.
Yes, yes. See, I had to look this stuff up. You guys know. This is a wrestling singlet, which when I found the name, I was like, it's pretty well named because there's not much to it. And this is what they're going to be wearing when they go out there. Now, you would not catch me dead wearing one of these. Lloyd, on the other hand, this is his. I borrowed this from Lloyd. That's a joke. I had to get him back. Last week he made a joke on me. If you don't know what it is, I'm not going to repeat it. But last week I had to get him back. But seriously, I want you to just look at this for a minute and know this. Like when you're watching those wrestlers, or I don't know, some of you just won't watch because of this, but when you're watching those wrestlers, know that it used to be a lot worse. The ancient wrestlers wore their birthday suits when they were wrestling. I mean, seriously, they're nothing at all. Now, why do I mention this? Let me just kind of get rid of this. It's kind of weirding me out. Wrestling, as I was thinking about this, and just think about this, it makes a lot of sense. It's the most intimate sport. It's the most physically intimate sport, if you think about it. You walk on a mat, you shake hands with a stranger, like maybe someone you literally are meeting right now for the first time, and then the very next thing you do is you physically grapple with them, like your flesh on their flesh, your skin on their skin, like your sweat touching their sweat. The whole point is to use your body to pin their body to the ground. This morning in our text, wrestling is going to take center stage in the life of Jacob. As we'll see, it's actually been there all along. But we're here in Genesis 32. Before I read it, let me give you just a reminder of the context. It's been 20 years since Jacob had to flee the promised land, his home, because his brother Esau had vowed to kill him for stealing his birthright, for stealing the blessing of the father Isaac. You know, Jacob tricked him. And then in the first 21 verses of chapter 32, which is what Lloyd covered last week, Jacob's preparing to meet Esau again after 20 years. For all Jacob knows, Esau is still intent on killing him. In fact, he's just heard Esau has an army of 400 men that's coming to meet Jacob. That cannot mean good things. And so as Lloyd showed us last week, we find Jacob, no surprise, doing everything in his power to secure safe passage. He divides his camp. He sends waves of gifts to Esau out in front of him, you know, hoping to pacify Esau with all these gifts. And then Jacob does something that he has almost never done up to this point. He prays. He prays. Maybe for the first time in his life, he really prays. And I love the application question Lloyd asked us last week. He said, is God's camp our reinforcement or our only hope? What a good question. All throughout our story, God's been pursuing Jacob. We talked a couple weeks ago. He's using the train wrecks of Jacob's life to actually show up, you know, to actually move toward Jacob. And in Jacob's prayer last week is a significant step Jacob's making toward God. But if you remembered the prayer last week, Jacob is still calling God, quote, the God of my father Abraham and the God of my father Isaac. Well, he's still not saying, my God, my God. And so this morning in our text, we get the collision of Jacob's life. This is the climactic moment of Jacob's life. It's the place where he finally discovers who he is, what his life is about, what he's here for. This is the moment Jacob finally collides with God. I'm going to read the whole text. Verses 22 to 32, and then I'll go back and we'll unpack it a little bit at a time. The same night he arose and took his two wives, his two female servants, and his 11 children, and crossed the ford of the Jabbok. He took them and sent them across the stream and everything else that he had, and Jacob was left alone. And a man wrestled with him until the breaking of the day. When the man saw that he did not prevail against Jacob, he touched his hip socket, and Jacob's hip was put out of joint as he wrestled with him. Then he said, let me go, for the day has broken. But Jacob said, I will not let you go unless you bless me. And he said to him, what is your name? And he said, Jacob. Then he said, your name shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel, for you have striven with God and with men and have prevailed. Then Jacob asked him, please tell me your name. But he said, why is it that you ask my name? And there he blessed him. So Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, saying, for I have seen God face to face, and yet my life has been delivered. The sun rose upon him as he passed Peniel, limping because of his hip. Therefore, to this day, the people of Israel do not eat the sinew of the thigh that is on the hip socket, because he touched the socket of Jacob's hip on the sinew of the thigh. This is the living word of God for us today. This is one of those stories in the Bible, when you read it, you just never forget it. It's kind of raw. It's a little bit like, you know, what? What just happened? What's going on? You know, it seems to me it's just one of those stories in the Bible that just feels ancient and rugged. And it introduces so many questions. You know, it's the kind of passage that if you take it seriously, it can challenge or even reinvent, recreate your perception of God. It can push into the way that you tend to think about how God is and how he responds to his people. And I certainly hope this morning we'll all take it very seriously. Let's start with this. This is something that Tim Keller got me thinking about when I read some of his commentary on this passage. Think of it this way, and I think this is right. Jacob is finally in his life moving in the right direction. He's obeying God to return home. God was the one that sent him home. By the way, God did not tell him, it's safe to come home. Esau's heart has changed. God told him nothing. He just said, return home. So Jacob, assuming his life is on the line, obeys God anyway. Jacob, as we heard last week, just prayed this beautiful, powerful prayer for God's help and protection. And I want you just to think with me on this. With all your assumptions about how God operates, how would you expect to respond, God to respond to someone like this? Someone who's obeying him at risk of his life. even though he's overwhelmed with fear, he's following God's word, he's seeking God in prayer, how would you expect God to respond to him? He tackles him. He knocks him down. He tries to pin him to the ground. Before all is said and done, he wounds him permanently. I don't want to move too quickly past this cognitive dissonance here about what God is doing and how we tend to think about God. I think there's something very important for us, something for our own lives in this. So here's how we'll move through the text. There are two critical themes in the life of Jacob that both find their culminating point in this moment, in this night of his life. His two big themes find their climax in this moment. Let's talk about them both. It's wrestling and blessing. These are the two themes of Jacob's life, and I want to show you how they are. Let's start with wrestling. Let's put back on the screen verses 22 to 24. I'm not going to reread it. I just wrote it, but I do want to show you something. This is the intro to the story here. There's some really marvelous alliteration in the Hebrew that actually is important for you to see. I'm going to underline three words. Jabbok, which is the name of the river. Jacob, which is Jacob's name, obviously. And then this word, wrestled, which you have to understand what this word sounds like in Hebrew. Of course, you know, the pronunciation will vary a little bit, but it's Jabbok. Now, you start to see Jabbok, Jacob, Jabbok. What's going on? There's some intentional alliteration that's happening here. Remember Jacob's name? What does it mean? It means heel grabber. That's how he came out of the womb. He was grasping, he was grabbing on to his brother Esau's heel. So each of these words, Jabbok, Jacob, Jabbok, they're using the same core letters. You see that? And they all come from the same root word, which means to grab. They all are talking about this, grabbing. Now, the author does not want you to miss the irony here, that in the middle of the night, a mysterious man shows up and grabbed the heel grabber. By the river of the grabber, you know, it's like the grabbing river, the heel grabber, and this man comes up and he grabs them. Think about it this way. This is really helpful, I think. The text is essentially saying, the man Jacob'd Jacob by the Jabbok. He Jacob'd Jacob by the Jabbok. You know, say that fast three times. Now, what's the point? Jacob has always been a grabber. A man who knows what he wants, a man who's determined to grab onto it and get it. All throughout his life, he's been grabbing, he's been grasping, he's been grappling. In other words, he's been wrestling. Jacob's a wrestler. And so God comes to the wrestle, and he wrestles the wrestler. He grabs the grabber, you see. He meets Jacob on his own terms, so to speak. He even condescends to match Jacob's power. They wrestle all throughout the night. Do you notice that? What does that sort of imply? That they're evenly matched right up until the end, strength on strength. Now, we don't know it's God immediately, but it becomes clear to Jacob as the night progresses, and there's finally a decisive moment where he knows who it is, and it's clear by what he names the place afterward. He just wrestled with God. This is God himself somehow. What is God up to? Why is he wrestling Jacob? Think about it this way. All throughout Jacob's life, he's been wrestling people to get what he wants. If you asked him about it and he answered honestly, here's what he'd say. I wrestled my brother Esau for his birthright. I wrestled my father Isaac for his blessing. I wrestled my uncle Laban for his daughters and his flocks. And now I'm coming back to wrestle my brother one more time for my own life. In Jacob's mind, his showdown with Esau the next day is really the collision point of his whole life. Because Esau, if you think about it, Esau's really always been the one standing between Jacob and his happiness and his freedom. But then, the very night before he meets Esau, a mysterious figure comes out of the shadows and tackles him. It's slowly revealed to Jacob. He's wrestling with God himself. What is God trying to show him? I think God is essentially saying to Jacob, communicating to Jacob, something like this. Jacob, all your life you've been wrestling the wrong people. Your real struggle is with me. I'm the one you've got to face. You thought you could get through life and find your happiness by wrestling it from other people and avoiding me. But I'm the one who holds the blessing. You thought the fight of your life was tomorrow with Esau, but no, it's tonight, it's here, it's right now with me. Esau does not hold the key to your life, I do. Jacob, I think God might say, you've been avoiding me all your life, but I've been on a collision course with you since the day you were born, and tonight's the night we collide. I think one of the big ideas of this text is at the most important moment of Jacob's life, God got in his way. You might assume God did it to punish Jacob or to assert his power over him. I think there's more going on. Think about it this way. If God simply wanted to put Jacob in his place or teach him who's boss, so to speak, why didn't he just do it instantly? Like the way he did it to Paul, you know, just like Saul's walking on the line, boom, flash of light, he's blind. There's no wrestle. Why the long struggle with Jacob throughout the night? Why didn't he just maim him from the beginning and proclaim his glory to him if that's what he wanted to do? It seems to me God wanted to wrestle. It seems to me God wanted to face Jacob toe to toe, face to face, skin on skin, sweat on sweat. He wanted Jacob that close. How do you get that close to a wrestler? You wrestle him. By the way, who made Jacob a wrestler? Not a real hard question, actually, I don't think. Who made Jacob a wrestler? Yeah, well, it had to be God. Jacob came out of the womb grasping. What was going on inside as God knit him together in his mother's womb? God made Jacob a wrestler. And now Jacob's finally wrestling with the right person. There's a second theme in Jacob's life that comes together, that finds its climactic point in this passage, the theme of blessing. Jacob has built his life by his determination to grab onto whatever he thinks he needs to make life work for him. A better birthright, a beautiful wife, lots of children, lots of flocks. Most recently, safe passage back home. Why is Jacob this way? Why is he grabbing on to things that he thinks he needs to make life work for him? And part of the answer is because he's human. Jacob wants the same things that you and I and every other human want. Fullness of life. Peace. Happiness, flourishing, comfort, friendships, community, family. I mean, you put all kinds of words to it. What is it you most want in life? What are the desires that God has put in you for a life that you imagine is a life of blessing, for a life of flourishing, for a life of fullness? Same thing Jacob's been going after here. The Hebrew verb to bless, barak, goes all the way back to the origin of life. We find this word showing up several times in the creation account, the account of God breathing life into a void. I won't put this on the screen, but let me just read for you Genesis 1:28. This is right after God has made the first humans. And here's what it says, Genesis 1:28. God blessed them And he said to them, be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth. I don't think that's two different things. He blessed them and then said, be fruitful and multiply. I think it's one and the same thing. In other words, the blessing essentially is about life. In other words, God is saying, may life itself radiate in you and through you. May you be so full of life that it pours out of you and reproduces in others. Be fruitful, fill the earth, let life flow out of you, you see. This is God's gift to us, and it is the core desire he has put in our hearts. And I'm not talking just about having children. That's just one little expression of it. I'm talking about just being so full of life, be so full of the good stuff, the stuff that God made, the stuff that makes us feel vibrant, that it flows out of us. All of that went off the rails at the fall, Genesis chapter 3. So fast forward through time, and along comes Jacob. He's been searching for this life, this blessing, like a man trying to fill a hole. He tried to fill it with the approval of his father. He tried to fill it with the inheritance of his brother. He tried to fill it with the beauty of a woman, and then another woman, and then another woman, and then another woman. Like you and me and everyone else, Jacob wasn't born knowing where to look for what he was looking for. He had to come face to face with the one who holds the blessing. There is a particular moment in our text where it all comes together for Jacob, and you know, the penny drops. He has a light bulb moment, and it's right when he realizes who he's wrestling. You know, remember, he doesn't know it at first. And he realizes it in an instant because God does something so astonishing that Jacob immediately knows who he's up against. Let me show it to you. Verse 25, when the man saw that he did not prevail against Jacob, he touched his hip socket and Jacob's hip was put out of joint as he wrestled with him. Then he said, let me go for the day is broken. But Jacob said, I will not let you go until you bless me. Now, they've been wrestling all night. Suddenly, with just a touch, What does it say? He touched his hip. And by the way, that's what the Hebrew word says. It's what it means. He touched it. Just with a touch, Jacob's on the ground. God touched his hip. Now, why his hip? Well, for one reason, when you're wrestling, right? What's the goal? Is get the other person on the ground. Your hips are your leverage point. It's where your power comes from, right here in your core. He touches the hip. Jacob's in agony. He's on the ground. He's been taken out, so to speak. Think about how much power it would take to dislocate someone's hip just by touching it. So Jacob's now lying down in agony. It's completely clear to him. His opponent has supernatural power, and that he simply was just holding back all along. That was immediately clear to Jacob. By the way, it reminds me of that classic scene from The Princess Bride, you know, when the man in black is fighting Inigo Montoya and they're fighting and it's like a really close match. And then, you know, Inigo Montoya is like, you're really good, but I know something you don't know. You know, I am not left-handed. And he switches to his right hand, you know, and that's such a fun scene. There's something else, though, here that I want you to see, and it's one of the reasons I underlined this word, touched. In the Hebrew, this word carries the idea of authority. In Hebrew, to touch something is to extend one's authority over it. So in this moment, Jacob realizes who he's been wrestling with. Put it together, the supernatural one who has true authority over him. He's wrestling with God himself. And so what does he then do? You might say, oh my goodness, this is God, and just like let him go and apologize. I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to be wrestling with you, God. No, 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 no. That is not what Jacob does. He's lying on the ground, but he still will not let go. He still will not keep grasping. He says, I will not let you go unless you bless me. By the way, this is exactly how we know that Jacob knows who he is with. He's calling on God for the blessing. As soon as Jacob understands who this man is, he realizes, I finally come face to face with the one who really has power to give me what I've been looking for my whole life. And all of my grabbing, Jacob must have been thinking, I have finally now grabbed onto the source of the true blessing, and I will not let you go unless you bless me. Jacob realizes he's been wrestling the wrong people. Why has he been wrestling the wrong people? Because he thought they had the blessing to give him. He thought they were the ones he needed to grab it from, you see. Once it's clear to him, he will not let go of God, which is what I think God intended all along. So Jacob, the heel grabber, he gets what he really wants after all this mess. He gets a true blessing from the source of life himself. But I hope you noticed what Jacob's blessing is. It's not riches or prosperity as we typically think of it. It's not any of the stuff that you and I usually ask God for, money, health, you know, and avoidance of pain. Those are things in which most people think they'll find life, but they're wrong. The real blessing Jacob gets from God is a new name and a limp. Let's talk briefly about each. And he said to him, what is your name? And he said, Jacob. Then he said, your name shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel, for you have striven with God and with men and have prevailed. This is fascinating. First of all, what do you mean Jacob prevailed? Hold on. How did Jacob prevail? He held on. He didn't let go. Israel, y'all, this, you know, when I dug into this week, it's just my mind's just started getting blown. You know what Israel means? Some of y'all know this. Many of you may not know. It means struggles with God. Israel means struggles with God. Think about that. Jacob, whose name means heel grabber, becomes Israel, the one who struggles with God, the one who grabs onto God and won't let go. Even more remarkable, because Jacob will become the father of the 12 tribes of Israel, right? Those are his sons. And so then the whole nation takes on Jacob's name, but not Jacob's name, Israel. Why do we call the nation of Israel Israel? It's because of this moment right here. Now think about this with me for a minute. Israel means struggles with God. In other words, a people chosen to struggle with God. A people chosen to collide with God, to wrestle with him, chosen to become intimately entangled with God. Skin on skin, sweat on sweat. Jacob has finally discovered why he was made to wrestle. Why God made him that way. He was made to wrestle God. He was made to be the father of a nation, of a people, who would wrestle with God, who would struggle with God. This is fascinating to me. Finally, I want to talk about the limp. You know, so Jacob's blessings, this new identity, you're like, oh, I can see how that's good. I can see how that, wow, that's remarkable. Like we're talking about him today still. He was the father of the nation of Israel, 12 tribes, etc. That's cool. But what about the limp? How is the limp part of the blessing? Verse 31 is, in my opinion, the most compelling picture of Jacob in the whole Bible. The sun rose upon him as he passed Peniel, limping because of his hip. Peniel means the face of God. By the way, there's two different spellings in this passage. It's because they spelled it differently in the Hebrew, and they're using both of them here, but they both mean the face of God. That's what Jacob named this place. So the sun, think about it this way, you all, this is not accidental. The sun is now truly rising on Jacob's life. He's had a personal encounter with the God of his fathers. Jacob's had a collision with grace. And it did not leave him the same. It gave him a new name and it gave him a limp. It's a wound of love. It's the wound of a friend. Jacob's a changed man. I want you to think about him this way in this picture of him walking in front of the sunrise with a limp. He is simultaneously humbled and exalted. He is both externally weak and internally stronger than he has ever been before. Most importantly, he now has a lasting reminder of God's loving authority over him and his newfound dependence on God. You all, we typically want the blessing without the limp. That's foolish. The limp is there to heal us, not harm us. Dependence on God is true power. So let's apply this to our lives, this crazy story. This story of God getting in the way of this man, this wrestle. What does this mean for us? What's our so what? I thought it was very interesting as I researched and studied. You know, by the way, you know, I grew up knowing this story, but and I remember, covering Genesis in seminary, but you don't get a lot of time on each of these things. This is the first time this last week that I dug deep into this text. What I found in most commentaries that I read, when it comes time to sort of apply this passage to people's lives, and I think most sermons go this way too, they'll say something like this: your problem is you've been wrestling with God. Until you realize you're fighting God and start surrendering yourself to him, you'll never receive his blessing. Now, with great respect to all those people, it seems to me the text seems to say almost the exact opposite. Now, disclaimer, of course surrendering to God is a good thing. But that's not this text. In this text, God invites the fight. He initiates the fight. And in this text, Jacob's blessing comes from holding on, not letting go. How interesting. Maybe we can bring it to a raw, real place in our lives by saying it this way. For most people in this room, I don't think your biggest problem is that you've been wrestling with God. I think our biggest problem is we're so apathetic toward him that he's not really worth wrestling with. He's just not that relevant to our lives. It wouldn't occur to us to really wrestle with God because we simply don't believe he has that much to offer us, not that we really want. Like Jacob, we're more interested in trying to grab onto life from other sources. I want to ask us two application questions as we close this morning and just comment on each just a little bit. I'll put them on the screen as well. The first is this: do you take God seriously enough to wrestle him? I want you to see it takes great faith to wrestle God. You have to believe he's real and approachable. You have to believe he cares enough to give you the time of day. And of course, you have to believe he holds in his hands something you want, something you need. Jesus said the kingdom of God is like a treasure hidden in a field. When a man finds it, he goes and sells all that he has to buy it, to buy that field. He leaves everything else in his life behind. He says, just sell it. It's not as valuable as this. When you finally understand what God has for you, when you finally understand that he's the source of everything you actually want, everything you actually need, you'll go after him with everything. You'll grab onto him. You won't let him go. That's the kind of intensity he wants from us. It's all throughout the Gospels. Jesus talks about it. He says, when you pray, be like the persistent person that knocks on the door and just won't stop knocking. Let me go down a path because I've had some conversations with people about this text this week. You know, I've sort of like tried on some things. Like, man, what do you think about this? And the question that comes up is like, well, okay, but what does it even mean to wrestle God? Like, how would I even do that if I wanted to? And let me just spend just a minute on this as I've thought about this. It's got to start with real talk between you and God, real talk. And I think where that needs to go is places in your life that aren't working. Where is life not working for you? Where is it that you feel stuck? Where is it that the blessing, however you might define that, seems out of your reach? That's where God wants to step on the mat with you and say, let's wrestle this out. Let's grapple together. Come at me with your disappointment. Come at me with your anger toward me, God would say. Come to me with your desperation. By the way, if you don't know how to talk to God like this, read the Psalms. The Psalms, okay, it's never occurred to me quite this way, but I really love this idea. The Psalms are the prayer book for a people called to wrestle with God. Israel, those who struggle with God, here's how you do it. The Psalms, you see. Now, for some of you this morning, and I really mean this, the most important thing you can do when you go out of here in a few minutes is to say, I'm going to get on the mat and go toe to toe with him and give him a piece of my mind. Because there's something in my life that isn't working, and he could fix it. But he's nowhere to be found. That's the kind of real talk you need to have with God. Don't be afraid to take that conversation to him. He's inviting you to the mat. If you grab onto him and refuse to let go, he'll wrestle you with great strength and great love in his heart. Now, the second application question as we close out, do you believe he wants to be that close to you? Men in the room, when you were little, did you ever want to wrestle your dad? Dads in the room, those of you that have young sons, do your boys ever want to wrestle you? It's their favorite thing. Why is that? They want to put themselves right up against you. Strength on strength. They want to be that close to you. When you're wrestling, you feel the presence of another person closer than you would in almost anything else. Do you believe God would desire that with you? Our relationships with God tend to be cold, distant, and well-mannered. I'm convinced God wants them to be skin on skin, sweat on sweat, tangled up in the messes of our lives with him. Wrestling with God is not only helpful and essential, it's also God-ordained. God planned it because he wants to be that close with us. How do we know this is true? We have the testimony of Genesis 32. And we have the testimony of the incarnation. This is why God took on flesh. I want to invite you to take out your communion elements. Some scholars believe the man who wrestled with Jacob in Genesis 32 was, in fact, Jesus. The second person of the Trinity in a pre-incarnated appearance. There are hints of that in the text, are they not? Now, we do not know that for sure. But what we do know is in the person of Jesus, God became man in order to enter into the struggle with us. And that man gave his body and his blood for us so that we might prevail. Through his grace, through his kindness, through his sacrifice, through his mercy, we might prevail. We might be permanently, intimately connected with God. Perhaps for some of you in the room before now, you've never believed. Perhaps you've been afraid to meet God face to face. Fear not. He desires not to harm you, but to heal you. What he most wants from you is your presence with him in the wrestle of life, flesh on flesh, skin on skin, intimately connected together. And so on the night that Jesus was betrayed, he took the bread, and when he had given thanks, he broke it and he said, "Here, this is my body. Grab it. Receive it. Take it." And we do so in remembrance of him. In the same way, after supper, he took the cup, saying, "This cup is the new covenant in my blood. Do this whenever you drink it. In remembrance of me, let us receive the cup." I want to invite you to stand to your feet. We're going to sing another song that goes back to the theme of our worship time earlier this morning, the goodness of God. If God is not good, what hope do we have in wrestling him? We're going to remind ourselves through these words that he is indeed good. Let's sing this song together.